And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Fans of Power here. I'm Tyler T.R.X. Baker, and missing in action temporarily is Rotten Joe Amato. So Doug Turner is here with us to fill in the gaps while Joe figures out the improper interdimensional portal that he's stuck in and needs to get back to his playhouse, so to speak. So me and Doug will sit here and chew the fat and discuss some current Super 7 updates, so to speak. So do you have that information for us, Doug?
Well, I've got some information. I don't know if it's the correct information, but...
Well, you know, I mean, we could start some vicious rumors here and really get some things going here.
Yeah, everybody, just so you know, if you order anything from Super 7, it's an $85 shipping charge. Domestic, $200 international, per figure. Let's start that rumor. Go.
for a second there, I thought that was really like, wait, what the hell? I was like, that's not what I heard you and Joe say earlier today, because I thought, oh, dear God, what have they done?
Apparently, people were jumping in and throwing the four figures. What are they? The Ultimates, I guess?
Yes.
Hey, Joe's coming on. Joe, you there?
Jesus, Joe. Yeah, can you guys hear me and hopefully see me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so we just got started on shipping, and I told everybody that it's now going to be $85 per figure domestic and $200 international for each figure.
Yeah, that's
and I believe that for a second there. I thought, wait, what?
Yeah, a lot of people, obviously there was concern over the shipping because the shipping methods, I think they had like 2 to 3 day and I don't know, overnight. I couldn't remember what all the options were, but either way, some people were, you know, saying, Jesus, they're having to pay anywhere from $30 to $50 for shipping. But they just put up standard shipping now. So people can get all four of the figures shipped to them in the United States for $16. So that pleases a lot of the fans because the shipping was concerning people. So, yeah, $16, you can't beat that for all figures being shipped to you. That's a good deal.
But even the original price wasn't that bad. It was like $28, $29 to have the four figures shipped 2 to 3 day shipping. I mean, that is a very fair price for the four figures, especially if you consider how much it was costing for shipping and handling through Digital River for one single figure as part of their whole debacle.
Oh, well, I mean, sure, but, you know, just some people, I mean, not some people, a lot of people were having issues with just, you know, it still might be a lot for them either way, 28, like I said, it'd still be a good deal, but some people are used to the standard shipping option, which was cheaper, so they at least are doing that for fans, which is fantastic for them to do that, so they are now offering the standard shipping, so anybody that maybe didn't want to pay that $28 to $40, they got $16, so... I mean, I guess you're pleasing everybody. Like you said, if you want it 2 to 3 day, you're going to pay $28 or whatever. Hey, you can do that too. But so there's the $16 option is there now. So thanks, Doug, for at least filling in. And Tyler, sorry I'm late, T-Rex, but Jesus, I have been having issues with this stupid tablet of mine trying to.
I was late getting here too. It was like 9 o'clock on the dot before I actually got on here with getting the commentary set up and anything else too. So I was detained also.
Okay. Yeah. Well, cause I tried to just, you know, go on through my tablet, but it was saying you need to install Messenger. I was like, I have Messenger, but it's wanting an update. I started doing update and it still was installing. I said, well, I'm going to have to go to the old computer here. It's going to be a little slower and maybe glitchier, but at least I can do my stuff. So what did you start us off? You want to do an introduction? Was it already done or what?
I guess if people who are watching us, well, at any point, whether as we're recording or 3 months from now, Joe has now just joined us. So let me reintroduce Joe Amato since he is now gracious with his presence here. And I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker. Doug Turner, our man behind the curtain.
That's right.
Is always, you know, hiding in the shadows as we record every episode. So we're looking to dig into a lot of meaty discussions concerning She-Ra and a certain three towers, so to speak. And
yes.
And who knows what can develop from there. But I guess before we get going, I want to thank just everybody who continues to support this show. watches us on YouTube or listens to us on Podbean or iTunes. Just I always just want to remind people, you know, that we're very thankful that, you know, we do this just for fun. We want to people to know that, you know, we love to hear that people enjoy our conversations about He-Man. You know, it's, I know there's not a whole lot going on with He-Man right now. You know, there's no new cartoons and the movie news is laughable. And it's good to know that there are people out there that still support this brand, you know, all these years later, and just like hearing good discussions about that. So for everybody that devotes their whatever point of their week, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, this coming Friday, or two Sundays from now, you're going to listen to us. We thank you for the time you devote to us, because it makes it all worthwhile, and that's why we do it. So
absolutely agree. Yeah, definitely, because I wanted to give a special shout-out to a listener that's, you know, he's been commenting, you know, for a couple weeks now. He's sharing our link to the show. His name is Gary Belisle, and I wanted to thank you, Gary, for, you know, always enjoying the listening to the show, the sharings of the show, the links and everything. Really appreciate it, so thanks a lot.
And he likes the burbs, too, so that makes him, you know, double thumbs up and in my book as well. And what's cool is anybody, it's like a secret handshake. If anybody has seen The Burbs, they can at least quote. I would bet three lines from that movie. It doesn't matter. I mean, I've met people that were, when I was working my previous job, that were in high school that knew The Burbs. Like, you guys are youngsters. How do you know what The Burbs are? But they could sit there and if I quoted Rumsfeld, they knew exactly what I was talking about. And it's,
there you go.
I love that about The Burbs.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, man. Well, T-Rex, how did you want to start off? Did you want to start off with the commentary, or did you want to go into the Three Towers, or what? What did you want to do first?
I kind of feel like the commentary always benefits us, because that way we don't feel like we're cutting. If, you know, if we run out of time, I mean, we have the commentary set first with the time after that. I we can switch it up if you want to do that. Feel like,
yeah, if you want to do the commentary, heck, you can start with the commentary and let everybody know what we're going to watch and get it prepared to what to do.
From season one, I'd find hard pressed to find, or it'd be hard pressed to find anybody who likes He-Man and She-Ra, or even just She-Ra, that does not like this episode. I think this is one that you could safely say is universally loved. I really, like I said, to picture there is somebody in the far corners of this planet who's a He-Man fan that thinks Huntara is, you know, above average or below average episode. I find that hard to believe. I mean, there's certain episodes of She-Ra and He-Man, I'm like, it's not as good as you're saying it is. And I'm the same way about certain episodes that people met, but this is one I think where we can all join hands and say this episode kicks tons of ass on multiple.
Definitely.
So that is what we do in our commentary on today. And like always, I'll count down from three. And when I say play, you hit play on YouTube, your DVD, your laptop, whether you're watching it off an old purchase on iTunes, whatever the case may be. And we're starting before the Filmation logo pops up. So it's a blank black screen. So 3, 2, 1, play. And there we go.
Okay.
And I guess my history is the credits roll. My history with this is I saw this on VHS with For Want of a Horse. It was a She-Ra VHS tape that had two episodes on it. This was the first one on the tape. And one of the three She-Ra tapes I frequently rented as a kid. This one and the VHS tape that had Laughing Dragon and Talent for Trouble. But Huntara was a big, big favorite of mine as a child.
Is it safe to say that almost every one of your first experiences with the cartoons is VHS? Because it seems like everyone, you're like, my first experience was VHS. My first.
Yeah, pretty much. I saw part of Things Go Bump in the Night on the USA Cartoon Express, and that's where I got to see Clawful, I think, for the first time in the cartoon when I was in kindergarten. But yeah, for the most part, it was all VHS tapes. So I remember seeing She-Ra some when I was in daycare on TV, but I mean, I could not tell you what episode it was or anything like that. It was
okay,
so vague, but VHS tapes was the way to go.
All right. Well, definitely this episode. I mean, yes, we'll be getting there. We go, Huntara. But this one, as you're going to see how it even starts, I always liked the episodes that started to where they showed the Fright Zone and they showed that in-depth, you know, from the top goes, as you'll see here in just, you know,
it's a nice panic scan of just how, you know, the Whispering Woods to the dark, depressing, kind of polluted Fright Zone.
And I always love the creepy music, the clinking and clanking, those stuff, and the iron as you hear. But I loved how it went down and showed all the bits of the Fright Zone as like you see right now. I always like that Horde emblem too on that big circle. Something fascinating about it. But yeah, this episode, it's one that there's no sugarcoating feel. Everybody wants to say He-Man and She-Ra both seem like they're real corny, cheesy. Not with this episode, because as you're seeing, it's starting off right here. Hordax just, he's fed up. He's fed up with all.
And I love this, though. As a kid, when I saw this, I loved seeing all the essential Hordesmen in the throne room all together. It was not something I saw a whole lot as a kid. So to me, this was great to see all of them together.
Yeah, and being yelled at, of course, while Imp's sitting right there laughing his little butt off because, you know, Imp's right by his big buddy. He's safe there with him. And I always like, he's like, why can't you be more like him or whatever he says? But he's a little instigator. But and then to always see Shadow. The thing is, Shadow Weaver never gets the bad butt, end of, being yelled at, if you will. She's right next to
her. She's pretty much the one that Hordak always respects no matter what. He may not give her full credit for something, but he would never, berate her the way that he does Leech and Grizzlor here.
And it's just, and it's a shame that it seems like all of them are getting berated, because they're all, intimidating looking characters in some form or another. But, they unfortunately would get yelled at Hordak, for always failing. But like you said, Shadow Weaver, nope, she looks too serious. That's the thing. I can't even picture her being berated constantly like he does to the rest of them.
But I couldn't see her putting up with it either. Like, she would be the one that would, she clearly respects Hordak. But there's something about her that I feel like if Hordak were to throw a verbal slap at her, she would throw it right back and probably then some. And it would just kind of stare at each other and then go about their business,
There you go. And now you heard how
the extent of Evelyn and Skeletor were, because Shadow Weaver, like Shadows and Skulls, where she turns on Hordak. But but it's not something that you link Shadow Weaver doing is someone who's plotting. She's pretty loyal to Hordak for the most part.
Yep. And as you see here, Catra and Scorpia, they don't like the thought of this outside, outsourcing, if you will. This is where you see how they're thinking about how are we going to team up. They don't like the thought of some other person coming in to do their dirty work.
And I never recall her name being said a lot when I was a kid. I used to wonder if her tail was sausage links.
Oh, poor Scorpia. Okay.
I didn't know what she was. But I love this shot here is Huntara Shitlands. You have this glow over the landing port of the Fright Zone here, and they're all there to greet Huntara. It's just the music that's playing. It's just it's visually it's very, very cool. It's a lot of good storytelling here in this episode, and Larry DeTaylor has to be given so much credit for that one.
Yeah, and the anticipation of who's coming out. And when you see this warrior with this mask and taking it off and you see that face, the mohawk, the skull tattoo for the first time, and this raspy, gravelly voice. It's like, this is a savage-looking woman. This could be pretty cool.
Yeah, she was someone that, as a kid, you just took her seriously. Like, she was like one of the boys. Like, this is – look at her. I mean, how toned and developed muscular her body is. I mean, she got that cool tattoo on her head.
Yeah.
Erica Scheimer, I would love to ask her about this whole episode. I mean, for her, the job that she must have given her throat to do this voice. I mean, I can't imagine like the damage it must have done to her voice when she was done with this episode.
Yeah, it's a rough, raspy, gravelly, whatever, how you ever would have described it. It's a rough voice. But I like, it seemed like, was it just me? But it did seem like Huntara had quite a bit of unique animation for herself, it seemed like.
They certainly did not hold back. And, I think with She-Ra, they pushed a lot more. Whereas with season two of He-Man, they pushed the boundaries with some of the bits of animation. But they give Huntara a lot, from her jumping, then she does her flipping towards the end of the episode. She's got a lot. I mean, there's no reuse of stock with her. She is all new character, new sculpt. Not new sculpt, but I mean, everything is new with her. It's like we're going to do this. We're going to do it right. I mean, just this.
Oh, and here you see. Yeah, I like this.
I love this. Like her sitting there on the throne and observing, like, wow, She-Ra is impressive.
Well, remember, and this is also Hordak. Tricky. Yeah, trying to make her seem like she's evil, because remember, you know, is the Salaxians? Is it Salaxians? Is that her race?
That's her plan. That's her race from the planet of Silax. Yeah.
Okay. So. Well, yeah, because they only, you know, they're there to fight evil. So Hordak's really convincing her right now with his kind of like, if you will, Photoshop editing. I don't know, his bad way of training. He's
doing what Joe Amato does on a regular basis here. So, can you imagine Hordak with his Photoshop program? You know, Shadow Weaver's like, no, and cut that out. Add that.
Put a Wonder Red He-Man there. Ford
Science Photoshop.
Uh-huh. That right there, that particular walk away seemed like...
Yeah, it's interesting. It's all. I mean, all this animation, all these details of her walking away, and when she's standing next to Hordak just a moment ago, you see like the shadow on them because they're watching the Hollow Vid going, and, and this plotting that Scorpion catch. I mean, Catra hates. It's like she hates any woman that's not her. I mean, that woman, she fears other women. She clamors to be the top of the food chain when it comes to this world of women here.
And I like her pairing up with Scorpion too. And now we get to see. Let's see what Huntara is about. You know what you know her race of people from her planet, what they can do, because now she sees Glimmer, and she's wanting to capture Glimmer, obviously, to bait and bring She-Ra, so she can finally have her battle with She-Ra. So you see her in this, obviously, spaceship, and shooting down the Glimmer and her big, gigantic, I don't know, moth butterfly that's on fire or something.
Yeah, like a big dragonfly or something like that.
Yeah,
butterfly. Yeah, butterfly, not dragonfly. Butterfly.
Yeah, you figure it'd be a little better protected instead of just a big glass dome that could shatter and slice it to pieces. But I mean, well, hey, it's still a cool looking thing, something different. But I like Glimmer
looking at their hair dangling down in front of her face, like, oh my! And this is a trademark shot. I think
it's iconic. Get used to it. Yeah. Get used to that. Huntara always looking down. You know what? I almost wonder if they took it as. That's probably a view most of probably all of Huntara's, you know, enemies or people that she fights. That's what they see, is always looking up as Huntara's looking down, because I'm sure that she's never lost a fight or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that you're under the impression that if they're given somebody to go after, they don't stop until they get them. And obviously, she's the same. Obviously, she meets her match in this one here. But we're going to see it again here. It's just, it looks good. And all the Skeletor music playing here.
Yeah, the message is supposed to be for She-Ra, but of course, Adora, you know, she's got to play it, you know. But yeah, I do. I always like that looking down, just constantly down on her enemies and showing Glimmer being trapped and captured. So She-Ra's got to come. The evil one. Isn't that how she ends, like, saying it? So
until we cross swords, farewell, evil one. Yeah, it's even as a kid, you knew it's like she's. It was hard to really believe that she was. It seems like she's evil, but I guess as a kid, this as I've said in previous podcasts before, it was always fun to watch the bad guy turn to the side of good, and even though. As an adult, you clearly see she's not a bad person at all. She's being lied to. But as a kid, you're looking as the bad guy of the episode is now teaming up with She-Ra. This is awesome.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I mean, when you first kind of did see Huntara arrive, and even though as a kid, yes, you know she's being tricked, sometimes you are under the impression that she was evil. Heck, I still know people when they got the figure thought Huntara is evil. It's like, no, Huntara's not evil. She's just a bounty hunter from another planet, but she was tricked by Hordak. She's not an evil person.
Like how Scorpion's got her own hideout, just like Trapjaw had his own in House of Shakoti. It's like this is a private getaway for the girls to go and do their own thing here.
And with her own, and she has her own vehicle that you'll see later too. Yeah. But I like it. Yeah, she said, you know, like obviously she'd rather serve Catra as force captain than, you know, serve Huntara, because that's a thought that, like, we're not going to have somebody new taking over and joining us and, you know, putting us to the back burner.
And this, you know, I mean, it's what can be said about the transformation. I always thought it was so cool as a kid to see, you know, Grayskull behind She-Ra and then Phase of the Crystal Castle. Yeah. Just seeing Grayskull behind She-Ra was such a great thing to me as a kid, of linking the two series together, because I didn't see a whole lot of crossovers between the two as a kid. So
right. And her transformation felt like quite different from He-Man's, meaning – you know, He-Man basically was the same pose from Adam to He-Man, different outfit, but She-Ra went from a door to the long flowing She-Ra hair and a cape, and she actually looked like kind of two different people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but remember, the whole deal was it can only be She-Ra that's going to go, so she's flying here with Swifty, but yeah, the deal is it has to be just She-Ra, so She-Ra's going to basically jump down, jump off, and go find Huntara and save Glimmer.
In a lot of episodes, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of light and fluffy stuff that goes on in the She-Ra cartoon because it was targeted towards girls, but, I mean, I think if you're going to introduce somebody to She-Ra, this would be one of the top three to show them, because it shows you that this episode could really be, you know, showcasing strong women that aren't talking goofy and talking with chips on their shoulders. They're talking like as if we were watching He-Man and Skeletor duking it out, you know, and the stakes are high. And just this confrontation between the two of them as they're talking and kind of weighing each other out, you know, kind of testing, you know, the willpower of each other. And, you know,
I also like that, you know, Huntara is basically trying to, you know, call all the shots, basically what she wants to do, where she's going to go. Like, she wants to fight in these woods, but she was like, no, go, let's do it right now.
You know, I like that she said, if you're so eager to fight, let's start right here. Like, that's just a cool thing for She-Ra to say, that, you know what, I don't know what this, you want to fight, fine.
Yeah. And there she goes with some of her little tricks and gadgets through one of those blinding balls, you know, did her little disappearing Batman routine, ninja thing, whatever you want to say. And she's like, no, we're going where I said. I still like it that Huntara is like, you're going where I'm going to go. She, even though she respected that, you know, she was ready to go and fight her right now, she's like, no, we're still going to do what we do. And here we go. Here come the spies again, the ones that don't want to be showed up. Scorpion catcher. They're going to follow them the whole way. And Scorpion, is it a crawler? What was that thing called?
I think it's mentioned one time. But they call it the crawler, yeah. Let's take the crawler and you know, watch the battle from hiding. So I think it's just a crawler. You could probably call it the crawler, or horde crawler, but this, yeah, that's what it is. Just a big scorpion.
And this was a big, real good showcase, obviously. You know, like, here's Huntara, a new warrior, but they really did showcase what she's about. You know, this is how she tracks and probably gets all of her, you know, people that she has to find or the ones that she might battle. And you see that she threw that exploding, like, little Chinese star thing and figured, oh, my God, I thought she was more of a challenge than that. And, of course, she is more of a challenge than that.
The shock on her face, you know, it's fun to make sure you show those kinds of emotions with certain characters and to animate Huntara as someone who's shocked at moments because, okay, but she's not losing her cool here. It's like, okay, I'm shocked, but hey, this is a challenge, and I'm sure Huntara – enjoys a good challenge when she's given somebody to go after. And I used to wonder, you know, I mean, not really wonder, but as a kid, I felt
more tricks. Yeah, and didn't you like this here? More tricks that you're going to see because Huntara did her disappearing act again. She thinks she's got her, but, you know, just like a cool person that's going to, you know, do the little bounty hunting, tracking and tricking, she didn't get her. It was just a trap to bam. I love it.
This look, that look on Huntara's face, like, you know, it's just small things like that. It's just, it's so cool to see her smiling with Victor, like, oh, I got her. And
yeah, and if it was anybody else, she would have had every one of them, but, you know, she was strong to bust out of that. She was going to put her to sleep right there with that sleeping gas. So Huntara's got a lot of gadgets, a lot of ingenuity. She's smart. She knows what she's doing. So you can tell this is a person that, this is a smart person that you hired to get the job done, Hordak, because if anybody could do it, it's Huntara. If, obviously, she was going after any lesser of a person, she would always have, you know, her victim, if you will. But, you see, I mean, She-Ra still hasn't defeated her yet, but she's given She-Ra a good run for her money either way. That's what I like. You always want to see the hero, like I told you in another episode, challenged or somewhat in peril. So you feel like She-Ra is kind of being challenged. You know she's going to, of course, best whoever she's fighting, but Huntara's putting up a good show. It's not like a quick one-shot character that doesn't do much. Huntara's doing quite a bit, and now that she's hasn't got the job done with her stuff, now it's time to bring out, you know, her energy swords.
Yeah, the stun swords are stunts, great lightsabers. I mean, it's clearly what these things are supposed to be.
Exactly.
And it's just, you know, obviously we know She-Ra's going to win in the end, but what makes characters like Huntara memorable is that if you're written, you write them as somebody who you know, is not to be trifled with. You write them consistently strong. Even when she loses, I mean, her whole attitude is like, I've lost, you know, I've never lost to an evil one before.
Right.
And I'm now your slave. I mean, you Bam. Add that kind of depth to her dialogue and her character. I mean, it adds so much more to this one character that would never show up again. And
true. You know, you know what what I just liked about that, that's a cool extra animation they didn't have to do. As you notice, Shira, you know, did the sword to rope or lasso. She got the weapons away, but then she roped her up, and you've seen that Huntara reached and had another one of her balls like she was going to do something with, and then bam, but then Shira pulls her down like, basically, I got you. But I like that they show that Huntara, even, she's still trying no matter what. Even falling down, she's still going to try to get Shira. But now she finds out, you know, all along that it was a trick. So that's what you always like. Like you said, as a kid, you always loved when, okay, you realize the person that you're thinking is the bad guy, which isn't a bad guy, but okay, wait, now Huntara realizes that she was doing something wrong, and then maybe now she should team up with She-Ra. So that's what's cool, because she's only supposed to be going after evil people to fight. She's not, you know, obviously after anybody good.
And I've always found it fascinating, because I used to wonder about it as a kid, and James Etock confirmed it, you know, that Huntara was clearly based on Grace Jones, and especially from Conan the Destroyer, Zula.
Exactly.
And I used to
real quick.
Similarities about that, and I wish we could have seen. I mean, I love what we got, but it would have been interesting to see had they gotten away with making Huntara a black woman. You know, same voice.
You know, and they should have. There shouldn't have been a reason they should have. But and as you just seen, I like seeing that Catra and Scorpia. They just they got the job done. Remember, they're never getting the job done. Well, they just, bam, knocked out all three of them at once. And so you see Huntara's being shackled.
So I guess for people who are big Catra fans, this is one of those moments where Catra was successful in capturing She-Ra.
I'm not going to be mean, but I actually
– not full. Well, I can't really give her – because she wasn't driving.
It was exactly. There you go. Scorpia did it. So Scorpia did it with a machine. And I always wonder, I was like, what are these – like, you know, I like how She-Ra and Glimmer are under some mystical thing and we're stuck and trapped there, but – Huntara just released them. I also like this with this Horde Trooper. Thing that always killed me.
I liked it as a kid. He's like, look at all the cool weapons he's got, man. I the weapons.
I just like how Glimmer goes right up and grabs, you know, She-Ra's sword. Like,
he just looked at
him. He's just standing there. I was like, is this guy going to do something? So she gets the sword. And as you see, I like this upcoming animation from Huntara.
I like this.
Yeah, you'll see it when she's coming to get her weapons. I love how she comes up on the Horde Trooper right here. She's now, like I said, now she's going to show her acrobatic skills. He's like, oh, shoot.
And she's like, lands with an evil smile. I'm going to kick your ass, man.
Yeah, I like it. It does. He just.
Oh, she's such a badass, man. Yep. And that's a cool shot of Hordak pointing.
Yep. Throws up the weapon. She gets her weapons back. And then, yeah, he's like, now, okay, time to unleash. And they're going to, oh, wait, here comes the old Larry Curly and Moe routine. You know, like, bang, where those two hit each other. But. Yeah, as you see, it's not like all over. Hordak's going to bring out the troops and more troops.
And I wish we could have seen more of this. I would love to see the three of these women, I mean, just tear these Horde troopers up right in front of Hordak.
You know, I wonder why they didn't, because it's strange not to see. Basically, she's like, yep, good idea. Like, they're gone. They left. I was surprised that she just said, forget it. I don't know if it was just to, you know, wrap it up
quickly. We're out of time.
Yeah, right. We ran out of time.
We would stick around, but you know, we got three more minutes to get this episode wrapped up here.
Yeah, there'd be like a couple scenes on the cutting room floor where you're seeing them like ready, like, oh nope, we don't have the budget to do this. We can't do. You see She-Ra stand like, oh come on, I was ready to fight. They ended
it. It would have been great to see the stun source come out and she's slicing and dicing Horde troopers all over the place.
Yep, and there she goes. She put on that mask, which I love that mysterious veil, too. I like that, you know, always these bounty hunters seem to, like, cover their face, but when it's time to get going, they take it off. But put the mask back on.
Yeah, you know, taking it off at night, and that there's, you know, there's a friendship that's established there. It's like they respect each other, and that, you know, you'd hope that these two would see each other again, which we would have gotten had they okayed the sequel called Sylaxian Wars that was was a sheer episode that I believe was written and even storyboarded, but was never came to fruition.
Yeah, it sucks that, like you said, we didn't get another episode for her. It would have been great to have more of Huntara, but no, that was a really, it was a great episode. It was not at one time where it felt silly, funny, or like it was, you know, beneath somebody to watch that, you know, I'm not going to watch that silly episode. It was a good episode with a great character, good battles, nice, like I said, use of all Huntara's skills. They showed many things she could do. So that's definitely one to watch. If obviously people want to watch us by themselves without our commentary, and then also do it with the commentary when they can do it later. If you're just on audio, great episode. I love that episode.
It's in my top three episodes of She-Ra, period. I hold it in such high regard. It's just gotten better as I've gotten older that I appreciate even more.
Yep. See, and I get calls. People are calling to try to tell me about how much they love Huntara. Just gonna let the phone ring.
It'd be great if we were having like a telethon right now. Like we're taking donations. We're taking your calls right now.
Exactly.
Doing live call-ins, you know, what people think of Huntara and things like that. So.
All right. So that was a great episode. So now we can transition from that to something that, well, it's something from a playset. They have some origins in comics, other kind of comics, and that's the Masters of the Universe Eternia playset. Now, Tyler, did you have this playset when you were a kid?
We know we're just going with this. He has to say this so he can rub in the fact that, well,
here we go.
Didn't have it. Kid, well, gather around y'all little children. Well, Joe puts on his Mr. Rogers jacket and changes his shoes there and says, well, come on over here, neighbor, and I'll tell you the story of when I, little Joe Amato, got my Eternia playset when I was a young boy, since you didn't have one, Tyler.
I'm not going to do the sort,
we agree, which I was all for doing this, but I was like, I know what Joe's going to do. He wants to bring out and point out the fact that Tyler didn't have one, and still to this day doesn't even own a part of this playset. However, Joe does, and has made a point to tell me on several occasions that he does, in fact, have a Eternia playset, and the joyous stories that came along with when he received it.
Here we go. Yep,
just like with his Spider-Man jacket that he won from Nintendo Power or Game Pro Magazine, or
that was through the Spider-Man contest, because
he claimed that he won, you know, the Fabio Barbarian game that he showed on Facebook the other day.
I did win that amazing Spider-Man jacket. That was the Sega CD. That was second place prize right there. A rare jacket.
Joe's going to be one of those guys who hangs out at McDonald's at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you know, putting on like a members-only jacket, and it has like a Lions Club hat on, he'll be wearing the Spider-Man jacket. And with a cup of coffee, be telling, you know, everyone in his circle the same story of how he won that Spider-Man jacket every single day.
Every morning.
While they're discussing how the government and politics should be done in America today, and then stares at anybody under the age of 50 walking into their domain to get breakfast on their way to work.
Like, hey, excuse me there, sir. I got a story to tell you. But no, so speaking of the Attorney of Placet, no, I'm not going to brag, but I will say that I did have.
You do whatever. I was just like I had this plan beforehand. It's like, oh, did I'm you? Going to, yeah, because Joe loves it. He loves. Joe has that thing. Now you had this, didn't you, Tyler? You're like, Joe, you know damn well we've been friends for years. I've told you time and time. I did not have the Eternia playset. Don't be coy.
All right. Well, the Eternia playset. Like, again.
De Niro, just stop everything. Just stop. Never mind the story, Joe. Never mind the story.
Real quick, because we'll talk about the playset, but also then talk about some stories of it. But I mean, yes, that had to be that is the most epic playset that I've ever seen. I know there's other, you know, toy properties that had big playsets also that are fantastic. But for Masters of the Universe, I remember when this thing was first, when I first seen it, that it was in the stores, and it was a surprise for Christmas for me, which I, you know, didn't know my family, was getting. My mom had it hidden in the closet. But that took a lot of saving for months to get that. I think it was $100 back in the day, which that's still a lot of money. But that was the big Christmas gift that I seen by accident when I was getting some, you know, snow gear out of the closet. And bam, it was there before I felt my mom said, don't open that cupboard. And it ruined it. But I said, I don't care. I said, it didn't ruin it. I'm still excited. So Christmas came. My brothers and sisters, they have tons of boxes and presents that they're opening, individual ones. And there's just one giant one for me. That was good enough for me. So I opened it up, and there's that playset, which I just looked at the box for what it seemed like forever. And then to pop it open and to put this thing together was just first. Just what an adventure as a kid. You know, I mean, it was so many pieces. But to get it up and running and with the track going around it, all the little traps from the Grayskull Tower and the Viper Tower stuff, the Central Tower, I'd never seen nothing so big and epic in my life. So it was just one of the, it is the biggest Masters place that they ever had. And a lot of people that I interact with, now, some people never even knew that thing existed. And others knew it did, but they said, no, I just never got it as a kid. And they're trying to piece it together now because it is fantastic. The one thing it suffers from is the tracks have this really, has a problem with in aging. The plastic on the tracks get brittle. And I experienced that a couple of years ago when I tried to put everything back together. And the track shattered. Oh man, that like broke my heart. I was like, what in God's name just happened? I said, man, it's over. It hurt to see that break. But then I heard people were doing repro tracks and selling them on eBay. I got a track. It's exactly like the original, more durable plastic though, and I got to see it running again. But what an amazing place that either way, like I said, for all its compartments hitting things. I used to tell people that's where I'd hide money from my brother. Because he was always trying to get any money. If I'd save a dollar or two, he wanted to borrow my money. So I'd fold that money up into a little piece. And then at the front of Central Tower, there's a gargoyle that you slide to the side. And I would put the money in there, slide it over, cover, hide it up. So nobody ever looked, he wouldn't look there. So that was like my hidden piggy bank for Central Tower. But it's what's different
Central
is...
Central Bank.
Yeah, Central Bank. But yeah, see, you feel like you have to say the Eternia playset or Masters of the Universe Eternia playset. Because if you say, I got Eternia, again, for the fans who don't have the playset or don't know what it was ever, they're like, wait, you got the planet? Or what do you mean, the palace? There's always a confusion, of Eternia playset compared to Eternia Palace of Eternia or the planet Eternia.
Well, that's what I thought because I had no idea that this was an actual toy. It was in the many comics that the ones that I had, but it was the one the first He-Man website that was on the internet back in the mid 90s, the Adam Tyner website. That was when I saw for the first time that the Eternia playset, which I always thought was the Royal Palace. Because all I had to go on was I used to get price guides, and I would just buy them because it would have He-Man toys listed in their prices and everything, and I would just look at that list. That was my internet, was looking at a list of toys from the He-Man toy
line. Oh, so a list, but no pictures next to it.
No pictures. Maybe on some of these you would have, like, a picture of a He-Man figure at the beginning of the list, if at all, which was not too often. So all I had to go by was what I remembered, what I came across, and what I've seen these price guys. And the price guy just listed Eternia, and it was, always was worth a whole lot of money. And I always thought it was the Royal Palace, like from Filmation. I'm like, what could this thing look like?
Okay.
To find out that it was the Three Towers that I had seen in the Powers of Grayskull minicomic, which I didn't know what they were. That I just would see the story, the Three Towers have risen. I'm like, where did they come from? Like, what am I missing here?
See, and
I guess the whole part of the story, I had no idea what was going on. So.
Yeah, and I guess that's, like I said, that's why I wanted to specify about how we just explained. Because you're right, some people, when they hear Eternia, are thinking, like you said, the Palace of Eternia. Like, oh, they made a playset, never seen it. And then when you show them the Three Towers, and ones who stopped collecting He-Man before that came out, they're like, well, what the heck is that? And then, like, that's a great example you brought up. You sat there, and in the mini comics, when you looked, it said, the Three Towers have risen. And they never call it, this is the Eternia playset. It's, well, of course it's not.
Joe, are you hearing Tyler's audio?
Real quick, I was just going to say, Tyler, we can't hear you. I thought that it might have been an issue with... with something else, but I can't hear you. I wonder if you can hear us. Oh, it's a shame. Tyler, we can't hear you. Can you see something clicked off real quick?
We can see you. We see you waving your hands around, but we don't hear you. Nothing you're saying is coming through. Oh, wait a minute.
Now.
There. All right, try now.
All right, you're good now. You went on a good thing and everything went off. Didn't hear a word you said. I thought it was on my end.
Because I heard you guys perfectly fine there, so everything's all right now.
Yeah, you're good now.
Okay, cool. No, all I had to go by was just a picture on that old website then, you know, it'd be not too much longer. I get to see a picture of the box art and stuff like that, and then realize that, you know, the monorail worked and how elaborate it was, and just would wonder for years, what is this place? Can you go inside the Viper Tower? Can you what is the rear look like of Central? I mean, it was just fascinating.
Yeah, because they never show many from the, you're right, you never seen many things from, you know, the back. The only one that really benefited was obviously Central Tower with its multiple levels and, you know, things that would go up. I mean, it just had a lot of great things. The Viper Tower, you could, like, reach inside and, you know, you'd swing the swivel and it would move the Viper head around. Grayskull Tower, which is cool, is you would take and you would pull up this chain with this ball, loop it over one of this part on a clip. And then when the monorail would go around, let's say you wanted to put Grizzlor into, like, a Grayskull Tower and the gates up. When the thing would go around the monorail and hit this chain, it would drop. And then it would drop the you know, the door right in front of Grizzlor or the enemy. So it was just very interactive. The same thing with the claws of the lion, the movable mouth. I mean, it was an amazing place, but then they did, like you said, they put it into some stories. We're not going to mention every freaking story that it was in because it was in stuff from the UK, other things. But obviously we've seen, was there at least 3-4 instances in mini comics where they showed the three towers, or maybe 3 or 4?
Yeah, it was used as a fairly frequent kind of battleground. And, you know, obviously the ultimate battleground, the search for Keldor, Revenge of the Snake Man, where He-Man, like, takes the monorail and breaks into Viper Tower, like, from above. I think that might be it.
The
Cosmic Key, of course, that was, it was featured there, but not really used prominently. But, right.
But search for Keldor, and then the Powers of Grayskull.
Yeah.
And
it was featured enough towards the end of the line because it came out in 86. And I guess it really wasn't featured in most of the 86 books because King Hiss and Rattler and Tongue Lasher, it wasn't featured there. It wasn't featured in Snout Spouse. It wasn't featured in The Warrior Machine. It wasn't featured in Rio Blast book or Multibot or Dragstore.
Yeah, they just, like you said, gave it just a few shots, a few times it appeared. But it was always the mystery behind it, you know, it was the power that, you know, since it has risen, things are different. As, you know, you've seen in the search for Keldor, when the sorceress flies down, you know, and she's in human form. And that's when He-Man's like, wait a second. I didn't think you could leave, you know, Grayskull in human form. And that's when she says, you know, many things have changed since the three towers have risen. And yeah, it's like they have so much, like, mysterious powers and things to untap. That could obviously to help you gain control and conquer Eternia. That's why it's weird that it's, you know, Eternia playset, but in their towers. But I like all the different effects and things that happen since these things. You know, I like that they implemented it. You're right. It would have been nice to have them in more and more stories, but, you know, it's like whoever has control.
Hordak, good. I forgot. It's in the Buzzsaw Hordak mini comic with Mosquitor. I remember Hordak breaks into Central Tower and it turns him good somehow, which story wise didn't make much sense, but. It's, you know, I guess it's just kind of one of those things that Central Tower is supposed to hold both good and evil, but I never really bought the idea that it could turn a bad guy good and or a good guy bad. It's just like it holds ultimate power, and I guess you could say it would corrupt you, I guess you could say, or enhance you. I mean, isn't it in the Ultimate Battleground mini comic where Skeletor breaks in, you know, because him and King Hiss are plotting. Skeletor's there, he gets stronger from being part of Central Tower, but then He-Man gets there and he's stronger because he's part of Central Tower too. Am I correct?
I believe that was in from the Ultimate Battleground, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of show you that whoever's got control does get stronger, but, you know, obviously He-Man and Skeletor would be the strongest of the two. I mean, King Hiss and Hordak would probably be about the same as well, sort of.
Yeah, and that one story from, I think it was one of the UK stories that we covered, that was the one where we had Scareglow and Ninjor featured, remember? And they were like, man, but that one seemed like it was pretty in-depth. It seemed like that had a lot that was going on inside, you know, the tower itself. But, you know, of course you get to see the gimmick of Scareglow with the light. When the light comes on, he disappears. When it's dark, then he appears. Because that was a time where he, I think, was – they were factoring the toy feature, like glowing in the dark. So But no, I would hope that if, again, we'd get new comics something in the future, that if they implement these, it'd be nice if they go really in depth a little bit more with them. I kind of always found it strange that sometimes how when they draw and they depict it, you know, Central Tower, obviously, Viper Tower, Grayskull Tower, and then next to that is Grayskull, next to that is Snake Mountain. It made it feel like, okay, they're all a little too close. I know it was just fun because for the toys and play sets it worked, but in the comics it would look weird, like, oh, so everything's just right by each other? It's like right across the street?
Which I think, you know, me and Joe, we've talked about this before, and I had always felt, because I can't remember where I picked this up from, but it just seemed like what they were trying to say is that that these three towers were, obviously toy forms can be a lot smaller, but it's story-wise that these are supposed to stretch out so far that Viper Tower, the monorail goes from one side of Eternia to the other, where Grayskull Tower is more closer to Grayskull, Viper Tower is more closer to Snake Mountain, and in between all of it is Central Tower. And because you would see in the illustrations that Snake Mountain would be over here, as if you could ride the monorail over to Viper Tower, you'd be closer to Snake Mountain. You could ride to kind of Grayskull Tower, you'd be closer to Grayskull kind of thing. But obviously, when you see like the posters and the illustrations that show all of them together, it's like, you know, Snake Mountain's not next door to Castle Grayskull, but that's the kind of the suspension of disbelief. Your imagination is supposed to kind of, you know, paint the picture that it's such a big world and that riding this could take you to one side of Eternia to the other. You know?
Yeah, because for toy, it works great. And I see what you mean for, like, you know, how, you know, if they would do it in comic form and, yes, maybe stretch it. Maybe if they did expand, maybe if there could be a more unique story, meaning these are three mysterious towers, all which hold great secrets and powers. Maybe they, when they rise, they could rise in different locations, meaning Central Tower in one spot, Viper Tower far off in maybe an evil part of the land, Grayskull Tower in part of like the good, and maybe by getting in the Central Tower, maybe that could be a way of almost like how with Point Dread and Talonfire, how you could teleport from one spot to another. Maybe if you get into Central Tower, maybe it has the way to teleport you to Viper Tower or to, you know, Grayskull Tower, which gets you closer to the places you need to go. Maybe that could be a way of, for story-wise, using the way of traveling instead of a monorail. So it could be like a twist.
And I would love to know, I know that, you know, Ted Mayer, who worked on the toy line, I know he did some sketches and some concept drawings for the Eternia playset, and I would love to ask, you know, some of the guys who worked on the line, maybe Ted Mayer could answer that kind of thing as well, where the basis of it, I mean, the idea behind these three towers, are you saying that good and evil made an alliance and decided to unite themselves temporarily? Because you've got obviously what's supposed to be a castle of evil, a castle of good, and the one tower between the two of them, and a track that unites all three of them here.
Yeah.
So it kind of sounds like in imagination, like you can't do anything with Viper Tower except turn the head. Like, isn't there like a small hole in the base of it in the back?
Well, yeah, in the back, there's just this gap where you put your hand in and you can just move this thing to rotate.
Yeah, it's not a hole. You can't really do anything with it, which I always found so lackluster when I found that there's nothing you could do with it, and that Grayskull Tower was just a, you know, small little, you know,
kind just of... trap door, that's it, just to go
it's
down.
A trap door, you can stand someone on top, correct?
You could put somebody on top of it. Yeah, you could put somebody on top of there. No, but you're right, it's like Central Tower is just basically, that's where all the, well, think of that, Central Tower controls everything, just like in the toy. I mean, you just do everything. It had so many different little features. It was well worth it for that, and just to have the whole monorail and going around thing. It was just fascinating. It was He-Man's version for me of a racetrack. You know, kids like having their cars going yum yum yum. Well, this, you got something going around, and it just worked perfect. It was a great gimmick, if you will.
And I love it. And I think this is in the Revenge of the Snake Men mini comic too, where when King Hiss, you know, sends Squeeze and Snake Face and Blast Tech to capture the sorceress and the king and queen. When He-Man jumps, when he decides, you know, I can get to Viper Tower faster if I take the battery, and just the image of him jumping in and just riding along this track to get to Viper Tower, it's a cool image that he jumps out of it and lands on top of Viper Tower, and you're kind of thinking, like, is this several miles, is it several hours, or is it just a block away? But it's still cool that I'll take the battery and get to Viper Tower here. It's just it was just, it just looked cool. You know, He-Man taking this vehicle that dangles above, you know, these three massive towers and just rides it along there. And the Ultimate Battleground illustrates it cool too, because I think Skeletor destroys it with the cannon at the top of Central Tower, and the Snoutspout comes along and catches He-Man. And but it just shows you that a lot of good stories could be told with this. I mean, the box art alone, then you've got the big William George poster.
Yep.
You know, illustrates, I mean, everybody, just one giant Royal Rumble on Eternia.
That was a big war. Yeah.
You know, it's a shame. I mean, which just shows you that, you know what, there's a lot of stories that have yet to be told that still could be told. You know, I mean, just with using Grayskull, Snake Mountain, the Fright Zone, Slime Pit, whatever, but with Eternia, the Eternia play, the three towers, not only can you tell current stories, but the stories of when Hero and Eldor were around, when you have to assume that, you know, this is a prehistoric playset, essentially. This in the mini comic, it was sunk by the Elders, you know, for probably reasons like, you know what, this is too dangerous to have in our world right now, let's just sink it.
Yeah, and you got to see him in the time of Hero. Yeah, you got to see him in the time of Hero. So.
Yeah. And it just, you could kind of see, like, maybe this was like a temporary alliance between, you know, the heroes of that, you know, I mean, not just Hero, but the heroic warriors of that time, along with King Hiss, maybe even the Horde, because the Viper Tower that's King Hiss's hideout. At least it's where they kind of take base in it at certain points, I believe, is the Viper Tower. And, it would just be interesting somebody would probably come along and just kind of just wreck the, you know, a good idea, but it would never happen.
Our stuff doesn't get wrecked. There's always fantastic.
Oh no, and certainly not in the hands of the great writers at DC Comics.
That'd be fantastic.
But I feel like there's so much that could be told. Great battles that could be fought. I mean, just a simple battle. Not even an actual story. Just give us a simple battle. You've got He-Man taking on members of the Horde and some Horde troopers at the Eternia playset, and the whole time they're just spending trying to get into Central Tower, and you're showing battle scenes going on at the mouth of Central Tower, at the top of Central Tower. You've got them trying to hijack the battle ram and trying to stop the Horde troopers from, you know, taking over the Grayskull Tower, and just, you could just tell some of the best simple stories just utilizing the things of what this place it does, which makes the mini comics that use it, I mean, it's just a blast to flip through and just see all the cool things that, you know, this place it could do, and what a good action sequence you could do just with this place alone.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's why hopefully we will see more of them in the future, because we got some, like I said, some pretty cool, interesting stories, but maybe now they could write it to where they can do something to where, like you said, expand upon it. And it could be done, hopefully, and if it's done, I hope it's done right.
Yeah, I mean, even the stories that we've got where Skeletor and King Hiss team up to rise the three towers.
Sure, I mean, they tried to use them quite a bit.
You had the Horde trying to get involved, which you see with the inner bus of Horde. I mean, Horde, you know, the Horde want to try and take over the three towers. So to bring in all four of these factions here fighting over this particular, you know, battleground, I mean, the place that's called the Ultimate Battleground.
Right.
I just feel like, gosh, there's a lot of good things that you could do with this. So many action sequences and stuff like that could be done with it. And
Now, fans will have to go on a search to try to get this playset piece by piece. As for that mini comic, of course, that's why the mini comic is one of the most expensive, because it came just with the playset. And if I'm not mistaken, I thought a couple fans showed pictures. A Mosquito having the Ultimate Battleground mini comic?
Yeah, I mean, it. This kind of thing is possible, because my Blade Men on Card figure came with the Powers of Grayskull mini comic, which was only sold with the dinosaurs. The only way you could get that was purchase one, but mine came with, like, I was expecting the Cosmic Key, but it clearly has the, and it's an untampered card. It hasn't been altered or anything like that.
Have you ever tried to price one on eBay just to see if you've ever seen one on eBay like that?
I never really looked, because, I mean, for the most part, you know, my main concern was making sure that Blade figure had the film strip sticker, you know, featured in the live-action He-Man movie. That's what I wanted to make sure it had with it.
Okay.
So, but I just thought it was a nice little part that it happened to come with it. But, yes, I'm not surprised to hear that particular mini-comic got, you know, put in with Mosquito, or could be the Sorceress. It could be a variety of characters, Squeeze, or whoever.
Yeah, so I know it's not many, but that's why it is.
It is a good mini comic. I hate that it costs so much, but know, it's better that than something like, you know, Leech's mini comic being, you know, charged.
Yeah,
you know,
that's all. Definitely, but. All right, man. Well, that was a good commentary on Huntara. Got a lot of discussion on the Attorney of Play set, along with its features and some of the mini comics. And like I said, there's other things that's been shown in, but just want to give a little taste of that. So, well, Tyler, before we wrap it up, what do you have for us, man?
Well, I don't think I've done a recommendation in a while. But, you know, I was thinking about this before too. I always like to try to emphasize episodes that I just feel like, you know, over the years in the He-Man fan community are just not mentioned, or if they're mentioned, it's just briefly. Like, there's not. I'm all about the fanfare, appreciating the less appreciated or less talked about episodes. And I hope to God I don't repeat myself. I always fear that I repeat my recommendation.
Give it a shot. We'll see if you did. I don't.
But I really look forward to doing a commentary about this with Joe one day. Is Betrayal of Stratos, and I've mentioned it on our Whiplash episode, you know, and probably in a couple of episodes. But I just like to emphasize that, you know, it was such an underrated episode that David Wise did for season two, and you know, to have Whiplash working for Skeletor, but on his own, taking orders from a demon called Krull in the Demon Zone, is just it's a cool team up story of He-Man helping out Stratos. It's like a buddy helping out another buddy, you know. And you got the first appearance and only appearance of Hawk in that particular episode, and you get to see the original Evil Warriors in the opening of this episode attack Avion. You get to see, you know, a little bit more of Avion. It's just I love the episode. I love it so much. And that was my introduction to Whiplash. And it was just such a cool thing to see him, you know, when you see him, he's on his knees, you know, talking to this demon, you know, not, you know, looking at like, wow, from a visual standpoint, this is just really, really cool. You know, not something that you would expect, you know, that one of these evil warriors that's featured in a children's cartoon is on his own taking orders from what appears to be Satan himself.
It's definitely future commentary material. So
I want to emphasize. I mean, we want to do commentaries for, you know, everything, but that's certainly one that I definitely can't wait for it to sit down and chew the fat on.
All right, and me, I'm gonna grab something real quick because I'm gonna play a sound effect, and the first person that can give the correct answer on the Fans of Power Facebook page of what this sound effect is, just post it. I mean, heck, if you're watching right now and you post it over there first on the Fans of Power Facebook page, the correct answer, I'll send you some of my custom money. I have some other bills that I cooked up. I'll send you some, but I'm going to grab something and see if you guys can guess this one sound effect. So you got to bear with me. I'm just grabbing something. I'll be right there.
If Joe's lining up a big, massive fart, I'm going to be really upset.
Oh, God, no.
While he's gone and he's not listening, for your quote tonight, do the burbs and see if he doesn't get it.
Oh, I'm back. I heard that, unfortunately.
I did too. I'd already planned to do that, Doug.
Okay, well, here I go. I'm going to play the sound effect. And like I said, the first person that can guess this and put the correct answer on the Fans of Power Facebook page, I'll send them some custom cash. So here's the sound effect. Okay, did that come up? Did you guys at least hear that or no?
Yeah, was that from Zelda or
something? No, you can't guess this. You can't ruin it, so that's it. But I mean, no, that's not the correct answer. But no, that's it. I'll play overtime. At least you guys can hear it. I'm going to do it one more time. Okay, that's it. First person to get that correct, get some custom cash. But, all right. Well,
for me. Like, what are you doing, Tyler? You're killing me. Dude.
He's like, is that this? Like, well, there goes the damn thing. Let me make up another sound effect. But, okay, well, that's for me. Go to... Shut up. Go to Fans of Power.
Again, I'm not an expert on that particular, you know, if it happens to be that game, so I don't know for sure. All I know is the first game.
All right. Well, go to fansofpower.com go to popculturenetwork.com, go to HeManWorld.com, on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
That piece of scum barking rat has just taken its last dump of Mylon. I find one more, just one, I'm going to catch him and staple his ass shut.
And that's that poor, little, you know, it's bad if I can't remember the dog's name from the bird, but, oh, wait, I should know that. Oh, sorry, don't know it. Damn it. Well, I do know it's Burbs. I know it's that little dog.
And do you know who says it, though, in the movie?
Yeah, well, the guy that they thought died. Oh, God, no, Tyler's going to hate because I don't know the name. Wait. Walt. No, not Walt. Oh, wait. I'm butchering the Burbs. I'm butchering it. Oh, my God. Can we just go off the air because I can't guess these